Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at Surrey Farms. .com or virginiatraditions.com.
Okay, everybody, it's time for a game. I'll sing my song and you do just what the song says. Here we go. Rub your tummy just like this. Rub it all day long. Rub your tummy, rub it hard while we sing our song. Rub, 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 rub. Play and sing along.
Hello, everybody. This is another episode of Growing Good on Heritage Radio Network. We are live out of Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today's topic is young educators in America. I'm very excited, and I'm myself learning a little bit every day as I go on. Wally just turned 20 months, and I have been starting to research schools, Montessori, Waldorf, the difference between charter schools and public schools and private schools. It's all mind-boggling, but all that I know that matters is that people like my guest today are involved. I have the woman who taught me about Simple Machines and lent me the book Reinventing the Wheel, Harvard Master's teacher graduate, Miss Lisa Gutting. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Alessandra. Glad to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. So Lisa is a mere 31 years old, and we're going to go over, I mean, her resume is so far out and mind-boggling, amazing. And then we're going to be talking to Lisa about what's going on in education today for our children. So a summary of her qualifications is that she is an NYC education professional with over 8 years experiences in multi-arts teaching, pre-K to 12, program and grant management, research, development and implementation of curriculum and assessment strategies informed by multiple intelligences theory, teaching for understanding, and the Reggio Emilia, what is this word?
Pedagogy.
Proven ability to manage multiple projects, targeted school and community outreach, results oriented in independent and collaborative work settings. Her educational background is that she is a Harvard Graduate School of Education. She has a Master of Education and Arts in Education, 2010. She studied at Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania. She has a Bachelor of Fine Arts Painting and Art History with a provisional teaching certification in art for pre-K to 12 in New York and an instructional eye teaching certificate art K to 12 for the state of Pennsylvania. That's a lot for a 31-year-old.
Well, now my New York State certification is permanent, and I find myself not teaching full-time in the public schools. But I'm right now teaching for a wonderful nonprofit called Community Word Project, and they partner artists with creative writers, and we collaboratively teach in regular public school classrooms.
So you're hitting a mass amount of schools instead of just one school.
Well, right now I've got a residency in two schools. Mm-hmm. But in each school, we teach in multiple classrooms. So
amazing.
In an elementary school in Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy, we're in 2 fourth grade classes and 2 fifth grade classes. And then we just got a new residency, my teaching partner and I, at a Williamsburg school. Very exciting. It's called the Young Women's Leadership School.
Awesome.
Just around the corner from my house. It's amazing.
And we're talking about Williamsburg, Brooklyn, for all your listeners out there nationwide. Some of Lisa's experience in education, you would not believe for somebody so young and so pretty and who I often like to go out with at night.
So, I like to have a good time.
She has talked, so we're going to talk about a little bit of the differences and just kind of indulge in her feelings. Some of her experiences in education include she worked at the Metropolitan Lighthouse Charter School in the Bronx, founding arts infusion specialist and kindergarten co-teacher.
Yes. Yeah, so I was part of a founding charter school. That was a charter school in its first year. So I was considered a founding teacher.
This is in 2010. So this is the most recent.
Yeah, this is right after I graduated. I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to come back and do. And I never taught visual arts full time for a variety of reasons, most of which New York City doesn't hire that many visual arts teachers if you're not already part of the teachers union or in their system. And coming out of the recession, they were shedding more art teachers than hiring them. So I was coming back into an environment where pretty much the only full-time job in visual arts that I could get teaching in a school was through the charter system.
Which is insane, because this is after you spent 10 years of your life dedicating to getting this education and these certifications and an insane amount of money and time.
Yes. I found myself after undergrad coming to New York City and falling into the nonprofit arts education world, because at that time as well, they weren't hiring visual arts teachers. So I interned at the Guggenheim and sort of got introduced to the concept of a teaching artist, and that there's a whole network of supports for artists who want to educate others in schools but don't have the capacity to be in the school full time. And for a variety of reasons, a lot of people are teaching artists because they practice their art more full time than necessarily a full time teacher can dedicate. So I spent a good, 6 years or so, mostly in Queens, doing nonprofit program management as well as teaching through various programs. And that's what sort of led me into getting a master's in education, was really diving deep into teaching and learning and how to educate. Mm-hmm. How to educate citizens for a world that we want to live in. And that sort of more idealistically brought me to Harvard and the arts and education program there.
Right. And that's what's amazing and what made me think of today's segment is that young educators like Lisa, they are not going to be prone to settle for the way that the system is, the way that maybe, I know that the schools that I went to outside of the city, they're really looking for change. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. So the next thing that was amazing when Lisa and I first became close, she had just gotten back from Shanghai, China, where she was a global leader for Model United Nations program. So she was picked by the United Nations. How many?
Oh, no, it wasn't quite the United Nations. So,
oh, yeah?
But it was a Model United Nations program. Some friends of mine who were Peking University students in China, which is one of the top universities in China, very difficult to, it's sort of cream of the crop for China. And I was in China with the Harvard China Fund, and we got to meet these amazing Chinese students and really discover and look at the changes that China is making to their education system. And my friend, Te, happened to have this summer program that he and some other students were just sort of getting off the ground a few years before we had met. And he was looking for English teachers.
Right.
And I thought, why not come back to China in the summertime and teach for
weeks?
So
you went twice.
I went three times in one
year. You went three times in one year. And there you taught arts and humanities curriculum to engage middle school Chinese and international students in an exploration of current global issues, citizenry, and model UN procedures.
Yes.
Dang, Lisa.
It was fun. A lot of learning. That was a learning curve for me because I never taught speech and debate. And to do so
to middle schoolers,
middle school Chinese students with varying levels of English language skills. Most of them had pretty solid skills already.
Really?
And there were
because
some,
it's the one of the best schools.
Well, because they've realized in China that you need to speak English
right
in a global sort of world. And so especially schools that they're either paying to go to, and even the public schools in China, they start learning English in elementary school for sure. They know that to compete globally, they need to.
And
do
just
that.
Out of curiosity, I mean, what's some of the feedback that you're bringing back in terms of, the differences in environment, the way the teachers are compensated, and just sort of the politics of their school system in regards to ours?
Theirs is pretty complicated. I would say that. And it's not even necessarily a school system level, but within the family groups, within your family and society in general, education is very, very, very important. Mm-hmm. Teachers in China teach, one teacher is teaching 50 to 60 students in a room, and they are in rows, they are upright, they are ready to learn. They know that education is their ticket to a better life. And
so discipline, like just the way that it's set up is the classroom is a much more disciplined.
Yeah, and I would say that a lot of that comes from home. If their parents were to find out they were misbehaving in school and missing out on an opportunity to learn, they would have consequences, probably pretty severe consequences. So they have a and I don't mean to say that in America we don't have strong values towards education, but we do. And we're, I think, trying to move forward, at least I hope, in a more progressive manner. And China's looking to do that as well, because right now they're teaching kids how to take a test. And they realize that that's not enough. They are producing a lot of test takers that do really great on these national tests, but they're not innovatively thinking, and they're not creating, and they're not
becoming entrepreneurs and things that
exactly.
You need, like the kind of success that children in America have, just that free mind of thought, thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
So there's invent and which is what Heritage Radio Network is all about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a push for Chinese families that have money to get their kids a more multifaceted education so that they can attend United States colleges. Instead of getting into the Chinese universities. So there is, and that's a lot of whom I met that were university students. They were all working very hard to go to graduate school in the United States.
Right. So the whole thing is, and I don't know if you listeners know, but I was raised in Italy, and you know, as beautiful as it is, and the architecture and the food, that is the constant elephant in the room is, you know, getting out, getting to America. It's you know, it's the big thing. It's the big thing to do. So, you know, we should be more thankful. I know there's lots of problems in our nation, and I love you all for fighting against them. But, you know, sometimes it's good with your children to take a time to express to them, you know, some of the better qualities of our nation. And some of the opportunities that we have that others don't, and while we keep, you know, fighting and working for progress. So that's another thing that Lisa did, China. And then recently, I mean, when I met her, she had a very different experience in South Bronx.
Yeah. I was
it was
at a
tough.
Yeah, very, very difficult. The most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. And I really feel like I survived it. It was something that I had to survive. And I fight very, very hard for the rights of teachers, and it shouldn't feel that difficult. I had, you know, 14-hour days, was in bed by 8:30, was up at 5 in the morning and traveling, and then the whole day was very difficult. It was very regimented. There was very little playtime for very small children. And after a little while in this school, I realized that this isn't how I would want to educate children.
Right.
And there's a balance between closing the achievement gap and literally receiving children in kindergarten that couldn't count on their fingers, didn't know any of their letters, that
like
come
nobody
so
in their
disadvantaged.
Homes was showing them letters.
Nobody
was
reading to them. And so,
numbers. Ugh.
So there has to be a balance between catching these kids up, but at the same time having a more discovery-oriented and inquiry-based system for educating. And there does need to be a balance, and it's very different borough to borough, neighborhood to neighborhood, school to school. The New York City public school system is the most wildly diverse
right.
system that educates over a million children, and it's one system.
Right.
That's a very difficult system to change. It's a very difficult system to orient
penetrate.
In.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that this is more on a personal note, and I probably shouldn't say it, but you know, controversy and radio go hand in hand. But Lisa was telling me that a lot of the hardships that she had, and that's why we should be thankful of people like Lisa, was that, you know, she would spend all day trying to get through to a child, trying to get them to learn, and then unfortunately she saw that work kind of walk out the door with the parents.
In a lot of ways, yes. If
Which
you don't
is
have
so
parents
hard.
on board, then it's very difficult to make a whole lot of change in that child's life, especially in a very young child. And there were a lot of multiple, you know, reasons that it was a very difficult year. But the kids did learn, and I taught them.
Of course.
And we brought them, I think, further than if they had been in their probably regular home public school. But I mean, I don't have any numbers or anything on that. But we definitely had a lot of growth for students that came in very, very far behind.
Well, that's amazing. But also, you know, you had problems with the way they actually treated you, right? Like the school and the pay and just like the other, whatever, 10 years around you.
Yeah. Being not part of any kind of teachers union in the charter networks, typically there's some numbers on the, there's a website called the Charter School. Oh, what's it called? I don't know. If you put in charter school in New York City, there's a sort of a body that, gets together statistics and numbers on how many there are, what neighborhoods they're right. in, and how they're doing versus regular public schools. And charter schools are public schools. They get right. public funding. There's a lot of differences between them. And just like in the public school system, there's really great charter schools and there's really bad ones that should be shut down. And there's all right. kinds in between. And some of them have different, you know, teaching philosophies and a lot of that. And I was drawn to my particular school because they had an arts focus that the arts help to engage students and that helps them to learn. And that was something that was supported throughout the year. And I was able to work with wonderful, wonderful classroom teachers to infuse arts and arts making techniques with regular classroom content, as well as a lot of really, really arts-based work that was in my own classroom.
And we're going to be talking more about that. So Lisa, you know, she's had good experiences, bad experiences. They knock her down. She keeps getting up. She wants to teach the youth of America. And we're going to be back with Miss Lisa Gutton after this musical break. I picked the best record from my formative years for you today, Neutral Milk Hotel. Welcome back to Growing Good. It's a beautiful day in the station, an inspiring day. We have young educator, a mere 31 years old, Miss Lisa Gutting. She is a Harvard master's graduate in teaching. She's taught all over the world and all over our city. And in the second segment, I'd love to pick your brain about what changes you personally, you know, are in your mind when you go to bed at night and you decide, damn, I'm going to get back up in the morning at 7 a.m. and do this all over again with these kids that are coming to me from all different kinds of home environments, all different kinds of ethnic backgrounds. They're just, you know, hitting you. And what, you know, changes inspire you to make you get up and keep doing this for our society?
Okay. I have lots of thoughts about this, but I'll focus on just
hit us.
Yeah, right. So what I really want to see when I'm in a classroom, whether it's my own classroom or it's another classroom or it's at home when you're constantly teaching your kids all the time, we are the models, and we model behavior that we collectively as a society are, you know, putting forth out there. And I think that we need to sit and think about how we are inspiring our youth. And there's a few things that I would like to see more of. And I would like to see us inspire excellence in everything that we do and everything that our children do. Technical excellence, excellence in pursuing the latest knowledge, the cutting edge, and to perform it and go after it really well. Excellence should always be encouraged. Mm-hmm. I want students who are engaged with the world around them, not with a textbook, not with a bunch of facts. I want them engaged in the world around them, the society they live in, the world that we all live in a much more global manner. I want to see them engaged. I don't want to see someone that doesn't want to go to school every day, someone that doesn't want to read a book and like learn more. You need to inspire students to be engaged in learning all around them. And then I also think that we need a little bit more focus, especially in a school environment, on what's ethically responsible. Right now, we as Americans in society are sending messages that the cream of our crop engage in business and make the most money, and I don't think it's making the world a better place.
Or people happier.
Or make people happier.
Right.
So I think we need to be more ethically responsible in the way that we inspire our children.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. One thing that happened to me this week is that Wally started school at Waldorf, and every week they give me an article to bring home. And obviously, I'm a single mom, and I was really tired. And the night before, I was like, I got to read this article. I'm going to be the only parent that read the article. Guess what? I thought I was going to be the only parent that hadn't read the article. Guess what? I was the only parent that read the article. But one thing in this article that really stuck, and it kind of goes with what you're saying about excellence, was that it touched upon the word discipline, and that the origin of the word discipline is actually disciple. So another way of thinking of disciplining your children is to set an example. So you are the disciple, as instead of what it's become, which is punishment and timeouts, where, you know, they're teaching me that if my son hits another kid in a class, I shouldn't make him apologize to her. I should apologize and to the child. And by putting that example on, then Wally will want to apologize on his own, and it'll be a real feeling, because if I'm telling him to apologize, it's not a real feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was something really fun anyways I wanted to share, but go on.
I do think that reward and consequence are important, and that there are models that you set, and if, you know, you notice tendencies in your child that are not the way that you'd want them to behave in a working society, then there should be consequences for,
sure,
you know.
Well, I'm still at the stage with baby Wally that he's not talking, so I have to, I can only communicate with him through physical action.
Yeah.
But of course, when they start talking, the world opens up and you have to figure out ways to explain everything. And I understand what you're saying about excellence, and I think that maybe something that you were tapping into was that, you know, knowing the story, knowing the history of something when you're explaining it to your child, not just saying because I said so, you know, like really getting into it, like you said, like getting deep into it, like even, you know, something they were telling me about, like fairy tales, like, you know, find out what their origins are from, like what is it about? Like it all has something to do with something historical that happened or some sort of movement. It's really far out.
Yeah, fairy tales usually have a moral component.
Yeah,
they were created to teach and for students to learn from the fairy tale.
Right. So, what are some of the things that you have been excited about, though? Because obviously, you must have seen things in your school and in your education that have, you know, inspired you to do this long educational process, and even the process now of finding the place where you can actually do what you want to do.
I found that place. I found that place at Community Word Project, where I get to operate as a teaching artist. And I have great interest in artistic process as a process for learning. And I actually came across the correlation when I was taking an academic writing class, but this was before I went to school, and I felt like I needed to brush up on my academic writing skills. And I realized, and we had to write a paper about our writing process, and I realized that my writing process was very similar to my artistic process in creating a painting. And so a lot of the work that I did while I was at graduate school was sort of looking at different models of creative process in different, all kinds of different disciplines, in the sciences, in mathematics, in the arts, in the humanities. And many of them, they had different titles for the different sort of stages, but they all were very similar. And mm-hmm. so I try to do my lesson planning and unit planning around stages of the artistic process.
That's so cool.
So some of it, so you start with big ideas, and one of the best things that you can teach your children how to do is ask really great questions. And you should pay attention to your children's questions. Mm-hmm. You don't just send them to the internet or whatever, but really investigate what they're wondering about. Because if you stop wondering, then you stop learning. And wow. what you really want to do is have a long-term positive impact on encouraging them to learn as much as they can all the time.
I love that. If you stop wondering, you stop learning. That's beautiful, Lisa.
I just came up with that, you know.
A little bit about Lisa's painting. She is an amazing painter. And for you guys to really understand what you're talking about, you can view some of her paintings on her website, which is?
LisaMGutting.com.
LisaMGutting.com. There's a little bit about her education there, but these paintings are really amazing. The ones that I know that you've done lots of like nudes and self-portraits, but the ones that I saw up on your website were kind of these different like seasons of leaves and happening, and they almost look like watercolors, but I don't think they were.
They're acrylic and oil paintings, and a lot of that series, which I still constantly comes back to, is when you are walking or you're wherever and you look up and there's a tree and the sky behind.
Yeah.
So a lot of them were from the fall, but I'm starting to do some that are winter where there's no leaves, and in the summer right. when the colors are different and things like that. But.
And the real key for parents here, the tip of what Lisa is saying, is that you know, should the best way that you can be a teacher to your kid, and I'm learning this right now from Lisa, is to incorporate your talents into your teaching. Assess yourself. Don't spend time trying to be someone that you're not. Don't spend time trying to be a teacher that you aren't. And it's really cool what you're saying, and I'm just getting it now, where it's like she incorporated what inspires her and what she's good at into her teaching academic program. And we can do that ourselves as parents at home. I happen to be, you know, a very good musician. And I haven't really thought about incorporating, I mean, of course we do music time, but she's talking about like breaking it down, the dynamics of how did I learn to teach myself these instruments, and maybe applying it to even mechanics if my son wants to learn how to put together an engine, is what she's saying. Okay. And I think that's very great for the parents.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, you're also writing a children's book.
I am. I'm writing and illustrating, which is the first time I'm doing that.
So, again, another way that she's putting together youth and her passion for teaching with her natural talent.
Well, and some of that came together because while I was in my visual arts classroom, I found sort of a lack of children's literature, like storybooks that featured, and there are some, I'm not saying that there's none, but that they were hard to find, books that highlighted artistic process and the elements that get put together to make works of visual art. So and I think the books are going to end up being a series, an adventure series of a protagonist character that's getting worked out. I'm not exactly sure.
Sure.
Boy, girl, animal, I don't know. who has this big idea, this inquiry, this question, and she wants to paint, she wants to bring the ocean home. She loved this experience she had at the ocean, and she realized that painting the ocean is a way that she could capture and have this experience at home. And so she goes on an adventure to find the lines and the colors and how to put those colors together, and then goes through the process, the back and forth of revision and reflection. And at the end, she ends up with this beautiful painting.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's like there's certain books in our society that they just, you know, they're timeless. And so Lisa is out there every day doing the street work, but now she's working, and then she comes home and then she does the timeless work. I mean, we all have Goodnight Moon. That was, you know, those were psychedelic 70s artists that put those together. We've all got Runaway Bunny. And
Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Yeah, and you can
Snowy Day.
You can reach so many children that way, and I really wish you the best of luck with that. And
Thank
I
you.
Hope that, you know, you find an editor and a publishing house to welcome you. You're one of the most inspiring people I know, and I want to thank you for coming on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Any last minute tips to parents at home?
Last minute tips. I mean, really, it's teach your children to ask really good questions.
teach your children to ask really good questions. Don't be afraid of it. I know it can be really overwhelming. Why? Well, you know, let's figure out the answers. Love and light to you from Alessandra. Again, Neutral Milk Hotel. It's been a great show. We'll see you next week. And one day we will die, and our ashes will fly from the aeroplane over the sea. But for now we are young, let us lay in the sun and count every beautiful thing we can see. Love to be in the arms of all I'm keeping here.
Listening to me.